Football Weekly Extra from The Guardian in association with sportingbet.com.
Football Weekly Extra. With the dealio on the big midweek games, the Man United Wolves scandal, call it sheep in Wolves clothing, Mick McCarthy in hot water for sending out substandard players, Rafa Benitez and Lucas consulting with lawyers. Elsewhere, we've got the big Spurs-Man City clash and the latest on West Ham, and it's official, the world's best team plays in the Emirates as Abu Dhabi hosts the World Clubs Cup. There's news from around Europe, our look forward to the weekend's action, posts and Dr. Sidlow falling off the artistic roll call. All of that in today's Football Weekly Extra. Hello all. Now we've got a big pod coming up next Monday, so we've stuck the reserves out today. Hope that's okay. Young Sean Ingle, he'll enjoy the experience.
Hello, James.
And we've got Barry Glendenning.
Howdy.
And Paul Doyle.
Hi, James.
Hi, Paul. Nice to see you. Now, you last night had the very great pleasure of being at White Hart Lane for the terrific Spurs win over Man City.
Yeah, it was a terrific win by Spurs. Manchester City were awful. They really missed Sean Wright Phillips and Craig Bellamy. And Mark Hughes admitted afterwards that two absentees shouldn't be an excuse for a lifeless performance such as what followed. But they were... Not just lifeless, they were totally disjointed, and they looked like a bunch of strangers playing together, and it was a really bad performance.
It's funny that all their success came at the start of the season, when they were winning four games in a row, when they really were a bunch of strangers, whereas now they've actually spent some time together. They've had one win in 11?
Yeah, well, that one win in 10 league games. That is one of the most damning things of Mark Hughes' reign. It's the fact that a lot of players who were playing well, whether at City or at other clubs, are no longer playing well under him. An obvious example, given Aston Villa's position at the table, is Richard Dunn, how well he's been doing this season. And City got rid of him in the summer after he had a terrible season last season under Mark Hughes. Michael Richards has gone backwards from being England's most promising right back to a liability that Tottenham exploited last night, although Silvinho was exploited to a much greater extent. And what City failed to do last night, as well as cobble together any sort of cohesion, was nullify Spurs' obvious threat, because in the absence of Luka Modric, who has been a big miss for Spurs, their most dangerous threat is Aaron Lennon, and Wolves recognised that at the weekend, and they simply doubled up on him, and he couldn't get into the game and pose any danger whatsoever. Last night, they consistently managed to isolate Silvinho and Lennon through on him one on one. Which was just very slack from all City people concerned.
It was very curious, wasn't it? Part of the problem being presumably that Silvinho's backup would have been who? Robinho, which clearly wasn't going to happen.
Well, I mean, part of Hughes' strengths, where he said, judge me on this season because last season I had a few players that didn't want to play for me. But if you judge him there, 14 points off the top of the league, he's overspent on several players, and 22 million on Jolyon Lescott, 17.5 million on Rocky Santa Cruz, who has scored only over 10 goals only once this decade. 12 million for Wayne Bridge. But the other thing Hughes has always been about is the motivation skills. You had Robinho trudging off, you had the players arguing with each other. Last week, Barney Renee in this pod said he thought Hughes looks the biz this season, but I completely disagree. Now, I can't see City getting rid of him straight away, but I bet you if Hiddink or perhaps even Mourinho come available, City will be in for them quite quickly.
Well, surely they may well both be available.
Certainly Hiddink having failed to get Russia to the World Cup.
And I think everyone seems to be thinking that Mourinho is moving on at the end of this season.
I mean, Hughes, in fairness, as you pointed out, they are making progress. They've got more points than they did at a similar stage last season. But it's not a rate of progress that's proportional to the level of investment.
But they've spent 118 million this season on top of the 30-odd million they spent for Rubinho, and they spent a hefty whack on De Jong as well last season. You expect better than 8th place in the Premier League.
Yeah. You do, don't you? Cal Pat posting in saying, if this was Benitez, there'd be a blog every other day about how Mark Hughes' days were numbered. How does Hughes enjoy such immunity from the press? And of course, the other problem...
I don't think that's a fair comment.
No.
He gets plenty of criticism in the press. That's just wrong.
Wrong, okay.
wrong cap. Right,
I thought it was interesting last night. Rabino was a disgrace. He made no effort whatsoever to play. And then when he was taken off, he just trudged straight down the tunnel. I was accused of trotting out hoary old cliches and, dare I say, racism by fellow pundits in this pod, I use the term lightly, and listeners a year ago for suggesting that Rabino wouldn't fancy these midweek trips away to...
Hmm. You also made the same charge at Arshavin, who comes from a substantially colder climate.
I didn't.
Didn't you?
No. Why would I say that? Arshavin comes from one of the coldest places on Earth. I remember somebody saying it wasn't me.
All right, then.
But it is unfair to single out Rabino, because last night the only player who was really trying was Stephen Ireland. And,
did Adebayo have a
Adebayo was awful. He only perked up towards the end when Tottenham fans were abusing him, when he decided, okay, I'm going to show them. But it was far too late.
And there was some talk that he might have had a virus. Or the like. I don't know.
Was it a virus that made him sort of turn into a statue so that Nico Kranjčar could make him look a complete idiot by putting the ball one way, dancing around the other, and then prodding it past?
I think it was. Yeah, I haven't seen the medical.
I don't understand what his role in the team is supposed to be. And that's, they had three strikers yesterday: Tevez, Rabinho, Adebayo, and they were all sort of doing whatever they want. Whereas Villa and Spurs have a very definite formula, a very definite way of playing. I don't know what City's way of playing is.
Well, I'm glad you mentioned that, Paul. The producer, Pete, says he's had enough of City Spurs, but I'm just going to continue on because I want to mention very quickly that, of course, as you know, Julian Lescott's out for how many months?
6 weeks.
6 weeks.
Well, he's had an operation, hasn't he? So probably 6 weeks minimum.
Colo Touré heading off to...
Hugh said he's going to buy a defender in January.
Oh, that's nice. Okay, you mentioned Spurs, and they're very cohesive and indeed well-defined attack pair. It does look like Crouch is more valuable as a member of that than say, Robbie Keane is.
Certainly last night, yeah, his height was a constant threat to the central defence. Yeah, Robbie Keane hasn't been playing well since he was bought back from Liverpool. He's continued his Liverpool form rather than his previous Tottenham form.
Right, okay. And then finally, Spurs are in fifth place now. Can they follow this up, though, at Blackburn? They've only had one away win in their last six. Spurs and Blackburn do have a good record at home.
Spurs are very unpredictable. It's difficult to know how they're going to play
on
any
given
day.
That's generally the definition of unpredictable, isn't it?
Yeah.
Right. We're all in agreement then. Nice.
They
okay.
should win that game, but
they should,
there's
shouldn't
no,
they?
Absolutely no guarantee that they will.
Right. Okay.
More laser sharp analysis.
More questions put to bed here on Football Weekly Extra. Now, you know what? There's plenty of other stuff happening last night and indeed Tuesday. Villa, they won at Sunderland. They're very impressive, no?
Yeah, Sunderland were pretty feeble.
What a goal by Milner.
It was a beauty, yeah. Sunderland were sort of getting back in the game, and then Lee Cattermole came on as well, which is good to see him back because he's been a big miss for them, and their form has nosedived since he got injured. But then Laurie Kana got sent off for a silly foul.
Villa now level on points with Arsenal and 2 points clear of Tottenham. They're hosting Stoke on the weekend. In other news, Chelsea beat Portsmouth. Nice headline in The Guardian today. Chelsea's penalty taking costs Avram Grant once again. Of course, you remember the Champions League final. Yeah. And while United edged a fiercely competitive Wolves side 3-0. So then, the big question this midweek. Wolves, Mick McCarthy changing 10 of all 10 outfield players after their success at Spurs over the weekend. Was it right or wrong?
I think it was right. Because a lot of teams, go to Old Trafford, field their first team and just go through the motions. Token resistance. Mick McCarthy didn't even bother with that. He dispensed with that charade and put out his reserves.
It depends where you come from. If you're a Wolves fan, you've paid £42 for your ticket and what, another £15 for a pie and a pint and another pint and perhaps another pint. You know, you're going to spend a lot of money.
You enjoy yourself whatever at that point.
Possibly. You know, then you are going to be a bit more aggrieved. I was looking at
Why are you going to be more aggrieved?
Because you spent a lot of money to see your side
But you're watching your side. You support your team, whoever's
when
representing
Aston Villa
you.
Put out a B team in Moscow that time, we all felt for the Aston Villa fans who'd made the trip over there to see.
There's a bit of a difference between going to Moscow and going to Manchester from the Birmingham area.
You could have told
it's
the
same
fans beforehand, though, yeah. So they could know what they were buying.
But are these fans saying that if they'd known their first team were playing, they wouldn't have gone to support the team that was playing? I mean, the team that was playing needed their support more than the usual crew, so.
Well,
you know, you either support your club or you don't.
It's an interesting point. I think their feeling might be that if the club had already given up on this result to the extent that they weren't going to field their best players, there was no point in, if they were just going through the motions, there was no point in them turning up to support because the game had no consequence to
this business of you either support your club or you don't. Supporting a club doesn't necessarily mean just blindly following whatever decision they take. You know, you can support them by offering constructive criticism.
Mm, mm.
Well, the way people have been going on, you'd think Mick McCarthy drove around Wolverhampton in a minibus and just picking up people he saw standing on the side of the street. The team that played, they've all played football before. They're highly paid professional footballers. They've all played in the Wolves' first team this season. You know, it wasn't just some ragbag shower of misfits. And if Wolves end up staying up this season, then, you know, his decision will have been vindicated if they beat Burnley. Even if they don't beat Burnley at the weekend,
right?
I still think it was a wise move. Well, and it's not Mick McCarthy's fault that the disparity between teams at the top and bottom of the Premier League has become so great that managers of teams at the bottom have decided to just raise the white flag.
All right, well, let me just mention a couple of posts here, because in the four column we have Dane187, who says everyone does this all the time. Let's not forget the joke of a team Manchester United put out against Hull on the last day last season. Corleone makes a similar point to you, Barry, saying bigger clubs regularly make 6 or 7 changes, nothing gets said, because, you know, they have a better squad, perhaps. Having said that, I do feel for the fans who travelled up there. Those with a dissenting view, M. Meister says this could be the exact point historians will look back to where the Premier League most competitive league dream was banished. It illustrates the fact that it's two leagues within one system, which raises serious questions about the legitimacy of title wins.
Sheffield United did it a few years ago as well. It's not, Wolves aren't the first team to do this.
No,
indeed
not.
And Sheffield United went down, I think.
Private Dick points out, if I'll just summarise what he says. He says, basically, if you just fulfil an obligation, is it not a bit the end of sport? Latest development in the decline of competitive and meaningful football. Meaningless matches are the curse of modern sport. I like games where the outcome is uncertain, the quality of play high, and the victory equally important to both teams. It's a very fair point that if you have games within your league structure in which one team's just going to go, well, it's not in my interest to even try, who exactly are we playing this sport for?
But that's always been the case ever since the Premier League. You know, the rich get richer and the poor. I mean, this isn't new. This is, you know, 15 years.
Yeah, but it's... It's not new, but it does make you stop and think when somebody just holds up their hands and say, you know what, I don't have the means to even compete in this game. We're going to have a meaningless 90 minutes.
It's a strategic choice by McCarthy.
Yeah, no, I understand why he does it.
To give himself an edge in the Burnley game.
I'm not disagreeing with his right as a manager
to do that. Within
a league
structure, you can have managers opting for different strategies. It's one of the appeals of it.
Statistically, Kevin Pillane, who's the rating post expert, has gone through every single game in the Premier League, and a team that's 18th in the Premier League playing away against a team that's ranked second, I think, has a win percentage of about 3%.
But it's that makes sport such a thrill, will do. The minute you take that out...
But McCarthy's playing the odds, just like a poker player would, just like, you know, a gambler would. He's
I understand. I got what he's doing.
Speaking of playing the odds, one of the reasons he gave for resting players was, he said, you know, the analysis of the fitness level showed that they would be at a greater risk of injury if the guys who played the previous Saturday had also played at the weekend. And I was wondering, in the winter, when it's cold... players are said to be more risk to injury. That was why a few years ago, a lot of players wore cycling shorts to protect their hamstrings in the cold weather. But they don't wear cycling shorts anymore.
No.
Was that a myth? The only player I can think of who recently who's been wearing them was Michael Essien, and he pulled his hamstring.
Ironically enough. Yeah. Sean, just a quick note from producer Pete, who says you're saying the statistics of the 18th place team playing away to the team second in the league. Well, last weekend we had the team lying 18th, Wolves, playing away to the team placed fifth in the league, and they won 1-0. So what was the harm in trying?
But the point with that was that there's a much higher chance of you playing, you know, fifth.
But you get the point, Sean Ingle. You and your stats. Yeah. Coming up on Football Weekly Extra, we've got all sorts of things. Bit of news from France, bit of news from Italy, previews of the weekend games, and Sid Lowe with a lethal weapon.
Football Weekly from The Guardian, in association with SportingBet.com.
Now, joining us on the line from Madrid, sports boot loving Sid. Sid, listen, lots of important developments this week, above all in the field of footwear.
Yeah.
Yeah. Tell us more about the T90 Laser 3.
It's a really tremendous boot.
We know that, Sid, because you've been doing an advert with Fernando Torres, and the advert goes, Fernando Torres is back and he's armed with a lethal weapon. The brand
is that
new
what the advert says?
290 okay, laser. The
I'm not sure they're talking about the boot or Sid Lowe.
If you throw the boot hard enough at someone's head, it probably would be a lethal weapon.
What's your role in the ad, Sid? I haven't seen
have
this.
You not
is this
seen
on English or Spanish TV?
It's in English.
I'm not in the advert. What it was the presentation of the boot. It was the kind of the launch, for want of a better word.
And you're sat there with Fernando, who, as somebody points out, looks exactly like Bruno. And you're discussing extremely enthusiastically.
Hang on a minute. I look like Bruno?
No, he looks like Bruno. I'm not going to say what you look like.
But he also had the good grace to look embarrassed.
Yes.
Sid. You didn't.
Let's move on from your internet shame.
We will put a link to this YouTube clip.
Yeah, by the way, YouTube, if you go to YouTube, you want to look up T90 Laser 3 official launch live with Fernando Torres part 1. I didn't stomach part 2 or 3. Did you?
I haven't actually seen it.
Don't see it. And that advice goes to all members of your friends and family as well. Listen, let's move on to the football. Barcelona off in Abu Dhabi, where they've had a 3-1 win over Atlante of Mexico. So they're in the final with the Estudiantes, and people joke about this competition, whatever it's called. No, is it still the World Clubs Cup?
Well, in Spain, it's always described as El Mundialito, the Little World Cup.
Yes,
the World Club Cup, I think, is what it's officially called, yeah.
And Barcelona are taking it very seriously indeed.
Yeah, everyone in Spain does, actually, not just Barcelona, but in this case, even more so, because for Barcelona, it's a chance, of course, to round off a period of 18 months in which they will win absolutely everything if they win this. They would have won the treble in Spain, the normal treble, you know, the European Cup, the Spanish League, the Copa del Rey. They would add to that the European Super Cup, add to that the Spanish Super Cup, and now possibly, if they win, add to that the World Club Cup. So in that sense, it's very significant, because I think it's the chance, from their point of view, to do something obviously genuinely historic. Now, winning the treble is historic anyway, but this is kind of the crowning glory. And in any case, as I say, it is a tournament that's taken relatively seriously in Spain.
And in New Zealand, Auckland City, you're coming fifth out of the eight. Is it out of the eight or six? Is it? No, the eight, I presume.
Yeah, but presumably them coming, that's only the same as New Zealand getting to the World Cup. Someone had to get there from Oceania.
Yeah, but they beat Congo's TP Mazembe. So there you go. Listen, perhaps more importantly, Pedro scored in all six competitions the Catalans played in.
Yeah, the great thing about this is you look at Pedro has scored in all six competitions this season.
Yeah.
You look back at last year, he didn't score a single goal in any competition. But this year he scored in the European Super Cup against Shakhtar. He scored against Athletic Bilbao in the Spanish Super Cup. He scored in the Champions League. I think against Dynamo Kiev.
Yeah.
He scored in La Liga.
He scored in all of them.
Is he wearing Nike T90 Laser 3 boots?
I don't know. I'm looking at a picture of him in the paper earlier on. He's wearing some bright yellow things. I don't know who made them.
Right. Okay. Is he the reason that the Robinho move's not going through? Is it? Is that him? Because he's so good?
No, I mean, he's one of the reasons why Barcelona would feel that they don't necessarily need the Robinho move to go through. And it's interesting, though, that Pedro is in this situation where he's scoring a lot of goals, but you actually get the feeling that on occasions Pep Guardiola hasn't been entirely enamoured with him. Guardiola likes him a lot, and in fact, Guardiola's the reason he's still there. Pedro was on the verge of leaving the club a couple of summers ago because the staff at the youth team basically, obviously at the end of each year, do reports on each of the players, and the suggestion was this is a guy that probably needs to go, if out on loan so that we can see him with other clubs and then we'll think about bringing him back. Guardiola turned up and the Barcelona B team said, well, hang on a minute, if this is a guy that can play on the wing or at least on the far side of a front three, then I'd like to have a look at him. Guardiola himself had a look at him. He decided that Pedro should stay. Pedro then played a very important part in the Barcelona B team winning promotion under Pep Guardiola, and then it was Guardiola himself who brought him into the first team. Of course, in a way, the person who's paid for all of this is Bojan Krisic, who has hardly played at all since Pedro emerged.
Excellent. Sid, one quick final question, if we may. Real Madrid taking on Real Zaragoza this weekend, and Jermaine Pennant's side still managerless. Van Nistelrooy still talking of leaving in January. Where might he be going to?
well, he'll go anywhere that will take him and will pay for him and will give him the chance to play games. And there is a problem with the Liverpool possibility, which is that Van Nistelrooy would like a club to take on his current wages, which are high, and not just give him a deal that would cover the 6 months that currently remain on his Real Madrid contract, but he'd like an extra year on top of that. And Liverpool, as I think we all know, simply don't have the money to do so.
Sure. Absolutely. All right, Sid, well, that's fantastic. Let's look forward to speaking to you on Monday.
Fantastic. Speak to you then.
Paul, France, Bordeaux, 6 points clear at the top, eh? You got your Bordeaux, then you got Marseille, 6 points behind them. Montpellier, what are they doing there, in third, 7 points. And Lyon, trailing behind in fourth, 8 points behind. What's going on?
Bordeaux have beaten both Lyon and Montpellier in the last week. Montpellier have been one of the stories of the season because they're newly promoted, and when they met Bordeaux last night, they were second in the table. And they're a very exciting blend of unknown young players and a couple of experienced old stagers. They've been really good at home, but Bordeaux went there and inflicted their first home defeat on them yesterday, 1-0. Bordeaux have just been really impressive this season. They beat, as I say, Lyon 3 days previously in Lyon, outplayed them entirely. And Laurent Blanc, this is why he's rated so highly. He's turned them into just a really solid, really exciting, really dominant team. I mean, the big difference, I guess, between them last season and this season is he's improved their defence without improving or changing the personnel. He's just worked on their he's changed the system slightly, that they're playing a 4-2-3-1 now always, whereas they tended to just play them in the big games. But they're defensively excellent. They conceded fewer goals than anyone else in the Champions League as well as in the French League so far this season.
Well, they did look very impressive in the somewhat bigger pond of the Champions League group. Tough group they were in, and they topped it. Yeah.
And just one of the things that, for example, if Mark Hughes is replaced at Man City or Benitez at Liverpool or whatever, we'll be looking at is a manager's dealings in the transfer market. And contrary to what I was saying earlier on about Hughes, where some players have regressed and some of his big purchases haven't worked out, Blanc has been very shrewd in the transfer market, and he's picked up a lot of players who weren't doing well elsewhere and has transformed them into really good players. And basically, players progress under Blanc.
Everybody wants a piece of this Blanc Bordeaux, don't they, really?
And he plays a nice brand of football as well.
Yeah. So. In Italy, meantime, all sorts of exciting news. You mentioned Montpellier and their successful blend of young players and veterans and that. And we had Coltrane 27 saying, please mention good old Parma, who were fourth in Serie A, now 3 points clear of Roma and Sampdoria below them. They've done it in a very similar way with a whole crowd of people. I could go through now, but then you'd probably all be climbing out the airlocks by then. So anyway, let's just say well done to Parma, who are looking very solid. Coltrane 27 says that he doesn't think that they're going to be there at the end of the season, but it's still an outstanding achievement. But I think that they might well get into the European positions, just like Parma did the first time they came up under Tanzi back at the start of the 90s.
Is it worth having a quick chat about Roma, by the way? They qualified to the Europa League knockouts.
They certainly did. They had a big win yesterday against CSKA Sofia, 3-0 away. And they topped the group, Fulham's group. We'll talk about Fulham a bit more later on. And the other Roma news is the fact that Totti's just signed his contract extension, so he's going to finish his career at Roma. And then he's going to become, if he wants, a Roma director. That's nice then. Parma, in the meantime, are hosting Juventus, crisis club Juventus, this weekend. So that's going to be very interesting clash indeed. Parma, it does depend on injuries, but I reckon they could still be up there in the possible Europa League positions come the end of the season, because it's a very solid side. The other big news, well, there's two other big bits of news. One big-ish. I was saying that Gattuso might be moving on in Monday's pod. No. That same afternoon, he announced he just signed an extension and even reducing his wages by about a third. Well done, Gattuso.
So why would he do that? Has he been guaranteed playing time?
No. He just loves the club that much. He said it may not be logical, but you know, there are some relationships that go beyond, you know, ordinary sporting decisions. It was interesting, actually, the explanation of Galliani, the vice president and de facto chairman of Milan. He was explaining in this morning's Gazetta, actually, how he managed to negotiate successfully with Gattuso. Gattuso came in to say, listen, this isn't working for me, I'm no longer playing, etc., one out, etc. And Galliani just held up a photograph over his face talk to the picture style of him and Gattuso with their fist clenched in a kind of victorious pose from some, I think it was a Champions League match earlier this season, and just held it there while Gattuso ranted and ranted, and his waves of anger just broke upon the upon this upheld photograph until there was no more rage left in him, and he just signed the contract.
Assuming journalism goes the way it's going, in a year or two's time, will the same tactic work for you, Jimbo?
Very much
so. We'll try to reduce your fees. For
what? Yes. Anyway, now, and the other bit of news...
Hold up a photo of me and Jimbo on those... what do you call them?
No, you hold up a photo of Chappers until I give up and sign. Now, the other bit of news was just after... What on earth are you doing, Sean Ingle?
Barry was... In your 2008, you and... Yeah. You and Barry drove around Austria,
on the Segways.
On the Segways, yeah. And I was mimicking you two. Oh,
thank goodness, because you had your hands clenched out in front of you and your hips are wiggling and are shaking. I thought it was back to Barry's Chelsea-Barcelona goal celebration. You know the one, Barry.
It was nothing like that. There was no hip wiggling. I was on my knees.
Yeah. It might not have been your hips that were wiggling. But I'm going to move on now.
Please do.
The other bit of news from just after last Monday's pod was that former Juventus director Antonio Gerardo was handed a 3-year jail sentence for criminal conspiracy, his part in the Calciopoli affair. Now, there are two levels of appeal here, and even if they don't go for him, he's unlikely to actually do bird, as the... expression has it, because there's a bit of an amnesty on crimes committed before a certain time, blah, blah, blah. But it is still a really timely reminder, because the number of naysayers continues to grow in Italy. People are saying, oh, well, Calciopoli never really happened, or, oh, Juve were framed by Inter. And the fact that this criminal trial has just come through, and he gets 3 years, a big sentence, is a really big thing and a nice little reminder. And it's an interesting little precedent for the Moggi verdict. Moggi, of course, was the real power behind the cupola, as it used to be known, the dome, the network of influence. And Gerardo had a fast-track trial, so we've had his verdict, but Moggi's is still to come. There you go. All very interesting. And look forward to all the breaking news that's going to happen as soon as we finish today's pod. We'll tell you about that next Monday. In the meantime, in part three, we've got your posts, and I look forward to the weekend action.
Football Weekly from The Guardian, in association with sportingbet.com.
Right, posts. Lots of people posting and are tweeting. Chris Marie saying, well done for your diving piece, Paul Doyle.
Thanks.
Yeah, excellent.
If you're talking about posters, because I've been getting a lot of emails this week and last week for some reason from people taunting me for tipping Liverpool to win the title this season.
Right.
Can I just state again that I didn't tip Liverpool to win the title. I said they'd finish third, which may also prove inaccurate.
Yes.
But I didn't, so stop, please.
All right. There you go, posters. Leave off the big man. Okay, Corleone has been posting a lot about the dip in quality in the Premiership and beyond, and was wondering how many truly world-class players, i.e. in the top 10 to 15 players in world football, there are in England presently at the peak of their powers. He comes up with Andre Arshavin, Fernando Torres and Wayne Rooney. Anyone add any others to that?
Yeah, I think a few players at Chelsea, I think.
Drogba, for example.
Drogba, definitely. Yeah. Lampard, I think you'd say. Possibly John Terry.
Yeah.
I think there's an argument to be made about the Premier League not being as strong as it was for two reasons. Mm. One, You've got the exchange rates, and also the higher rate of tax, 50% now. So I do think there will be slow seeping away of.
And the injuries have been a big reason in the levelling.
And the end of the free spending culture that all those loans fueled. Chickens have come home to roost.
Liverpool are heavily in debt. United are in debt.
United, sold Ronaldo, didn't spend the money.
Absolutely, but you've still got three of the four English teams qualify quite easily for the Champions League knockout stages, so you shouldn't necessarily write them off yet.
All right. Tony Adams. Mr. Gareth E., can anybody tell me what on Tony Adams' CV would make the chairman of St Etienne think, yes, I've solved it, we're 17th in the table, we need a tactical genius who can motivate a bedraggled squad, get me Tony Adams. Paul. Hasn't gone there yet, has he?
No, he hasn't gone there. I mean, there's two possibilities. One, that one of the criteria for appointing a manager at Saint-Étienne is that he has to have previously flopped at Portsmouth.
Right.
So Alain Perrin would fit the bill nicely. And the other is that the one of the men who'll be making the decision is Damien Comolli, formerly of Spurs. Mm. And he might have heard someone at White Hart Lane saying, I hope Arsenal
replace Arsene Wenger with Tony Adams, he got the wrong end of the stick and thought he meant thought that must mean that Adams is a good manager.
Tony Adams isn't beyond sometimes publicly putting himself forward to jobs that he hasn't actually
That might have been the case there. Okay.
Plus, football chairmen make really stupid decisions all the time. And you see them and you think, oh, there must be method to their madness. But no, I don't think there is. They're just dumb.
It's not just chairman either. Sometimes you have the FA, Barry, making questionable decisions.
Really?
Yeah.
You don't say.
And a poster whose name I inadvertently chopped off his post is pointing up one such act this week with the inclusion of Stadium:MK in England's shortlist of stadia for the 2018 bid. He says, what on earth is going on with this bid? Are they deliberately trying to scupper England's chances, overlooking the unoverlookable fact that MK Dons only exists because the club was poached from another location? The one thing we've already got is loads of decent stadia elsewhere. We don't need to rebuild this place. It's only a shortlist, though, Sean Ingle.
Well, it is, and it's assuming, you know, England actually gets the bid, which, you know, if you speak to people in football, we've had a shocking last, you know,
David Beckham's been out.
Well, that's helped things, but yeah, certainly the preparation, and you speak to people in the clubs, they don't think the FA has handled the whole process very well.
Don't they?
But it's a shortlist, and you'll probably find that all these, the MKs, Dons, and the other stages that you would be surprised that they're on the shortlist won't
Milton
actually
Keynes
make...
and Plymouth, should they be in the World Cup?
No.
Well, Barry?
Well, I think Plymouth, I don't think there's any harm in, because... Mm-hmm.
A lovely part of the world.
It is a lovely part of the world, and the game should be spread out around the country.
Right.
Isn't it an opportunity to provide infrastructure to places that,
don't
the currently
world.
Have?
I mean, you know,
yeah, but Milton Keynes, a lot of people live in Milton Keynes. Yeah, you mm-hmm. could fill that stadium for Bon Jovi concerts and stuff in the
Absolutely.
Future.
Yeah.
But bear in mind, the last time England staged a major football championship, a lot of grounds were half empty when games were played. So why not have games that might not draw big crowds, play them in Milton Keynes?
To correct Doyle, I remember Metallica and Megadeth, the two of his favourite bands, playing a big gig at the Milton Keynes Bowl, you know, a decade or so ago, mm-hmm. perhaps longer. You know, Milton Keynes does fine for concerts and infrastructure.
Should they have the football at the bowl then? Is that your point? Or?
Well, my point is, I wouldn't give it to Milton. I think the guy, the poster who has no name, is right about the tradition. And I think, you've got some perfectly good stadiums in London. Why do we need to spend more money on a new
it's a somewhat sensitive choice, isn't it?
What are perfectly good stadiums and not just have it all in London?
Well, no, but you know, you've got three or four stadiums in London that you could easily hold again. You know, Milton Keynes is
why
what, 20
does everything have to be in London all the time? Wembley was built in London.
Wembley
stadium
is in London.
Sorry, yeah. Wembley Stadium was obviously built in London.
Yeah, it has to be otherwise.
I can't see why, because it's completely inaccessible, a nightmare to get to and from, which is what completely inaccessible means, I've just realised. You know, why not have it in somewhere like Birmingham or in the Midlands so everyone can get to it easily?
Yeah, the NEC is a delight to go to, which is built in a similar logic. It is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I've never been there, but I'm agreeing with you.
Mm-hmm. I don't disagree that we should spread the love around and stadiums around, but Milton Keynes, there's no point in building a brand new stadium in a place, let's be honest,
well,
it's a shithole. Let's be honest, Jim.
Think about the kids for once, Sean. It's not a hole, as you put it. It's actually a perfectly pleasant part of the world with a quite extraordinarily excellent indoor ski slope. And more appositely, perhaps, the owner of MK Dons says that he's already got the finance to increase the capacity of the stadium to 44,000 anyway. So
is this Pete Winkleman?
That'll be the man.
Ah.
We've touched on some mighty issues today, haven't we? And we've saved the best for last, because look at this. You've got Liverpool at Fratton Park this weekend. It's a big, big game for Liverpool. Portsmouth have actually won two of their last three games at home, eh, Pompey? And, of course, Liverpool now have all the pressure on them after Rafa Benitez was moved to guarantee that they're going to finish in the top four.
Was he?
Yeah, he came out and said that. When was that? Tuesday? Wednesday? No, Tuesday this week. He said, I can reassure the fans we will finish in the top four. So, sorted.
All right.
I mean, he would have been under pressure to win that match anyway.
Yes, he certainly would. They have only had four wins in the last 15 competitive matches. What are Pompey's chances? Sorry, Paul.
Well, no, just on the subject of Liverpool and finances, one way that they could raise money, I think it would be a smart move at the moment. Just talk that Javier Mascherano wants to leave in January, and he will be replaced by Scott Parker,
And that Liverpool would make a 10 to 15 million in, profit in that deal, because Mascherano sold for about 20 million. Park would only cost for 5 million. That would be an excellent bit of business in my book. I think,
but not in football terms.
I think Parker's a better player than Mascherano.
Do you?
Yeah, I think Mascherano's very overrated. Oh. Parker's certainly a much better passer than him, and he is as dynamic. Mascherano's a very overrated player, I think.
You certainly play Mascherano and Lucas together. Hasn't worked. Mm. Two very defensive midfielders, that neither of which can pass the ball particularly well. You need a bit of creativity as well as destruction in there.
Can Pompey's lively front three cause an upset?
Of course they can. Liverpool won three of the last five. It wouldn't shock me if it was a draw. I mean, I wouldn't be backing Liverpool at the prices they are at the moment. They're very, you know, the big odds on favourites.
Right. Arsenal, meanwhile, are against Hull. Arsenal squeaked past at Burnley, didn't they?
Well, they didn't. They drew.
Well, yeah, but I mean, they squeaked to that point.
Oh, yeah. Hmm. And Arsene Wenger's already been getting his excuses in early for the Hull game. He's been complaining that it's unfair that Arsenal have had to play, or will have played, three matches in 6 days, while Hull only had to play one in six. And maybe he has a point, but it's getting a bit tedious listening to him whinging all the time.
Mm. Well, because this is...
Arsenal have this, or he seems to think Arsenal have a divine right to beat teams like Hull and Burnley, without, and gets very affronted when, if any of them have the audacity to take a point, right, or three off his side.
When they when Hull won at Emirates last year, wasn't that when he called them Stoke in the post-match press conference?
I don't know.
He called them Stoke or West Brom or something.
By way of an insult?
No, I think it was. It seemed to be a slip of the tongue, mm-hmm, that he just got confused which minnow had turned up at his fancy ground. But there you go. Aston Villa, meanwhile, are hosting Stoke. Blackburn are hosting Tottenham. We mentioned all of those. Ooh, tough game for Man United at in-form Fulham. And when you say in form, you're talking about Bobby Zamora. 4 goals in 3 games now after his brace in the 3-2 win at FC Basel. Crikey. That's a tough game for United, isn't it?
They have a really good record, though, Craven Cottage. They obviously lost last year and got hammered, but that's the only defeat they've suffered in the Premier League. It is a tough game. I think Fulham are great, and I think Roy Hodgson's done a marvellous job. I'm looking forward to it. I think it's the game of the weekend for me.
Is it? Is it? Everton, meanwhile, are hosting Birmingham. We've won 5 in a row now, Barry Glendinning.
They have, and fair play to them.
Yes. Where's that taking
Alex
them to?
Alex McLeish is doing a brilliant job with
they're
them.
They're level with Liverpool.
They're not conceding many goals. They've won, as you said, 5 in a row, which is a brilliant achievement. Their back four is, I think it's no coincidence, they've been playing with a settled back four. Ridgewell, Stephen Carr, Scott Dan, Roger Johnson, which cost 10.5 million between the four of them.
Crikey.
I saw Everton last week at Chelsea, and Luis Saha was absolutely brilliant. Terry and Carvalho couldn't handle them. His touch was, and everything about him, he was just a really top-class striker and top form. And his contract expires at Everton in January, so he's
free. Really? Yeah, this January?
In the summer. So January he'll be free to sign a pre-contract agreement with other clubs. And perhaps if the right bid comes in, could even join a club. And given that he's available to play in the Champions League as well, somebody might pick up a bargain there.
Yeah, indeed so. Wolves are hosting Burnley. On Monday night, Wigan are hosting Bolton. And a big game on Sunday, West Ham, London derby with Chelsea. Now, the Hammers have lost their last three, and looking at Chelsea's last three games in this fixture, or last three results in this fixture, 4-0, 4-1 and 3-1, there's a good chance the misery is going to increase for Gianfranco Zola's beleaguered side.
I'd say if West Ham lose 3-1, that'll be an excellent result for them. They are hopeless, and they're going to get relegated. I cannot see, I don't think they have a hope of staying up.
Right. Oh dear. Some people suggesting that much touted David Gold Sullivan takeover might suddenly bring in some cash to spend in the January transfer market, but latest on that seems to be that those two won't be coming in.
Yeah, well, top investigative journalist Matt Scott explained in yesterday's Digger column that it's very, very unlikely they'll take over West Ham. I can't remember exactly why, but they have to please, you know, about 5 different banks.
The banks think they're going to get more for their money from other people, and now that their debt repayments have been frozen until September of next year, they've got time to wait for somebody. That's more or less what Matt was saying anyway. Super. Well, that on that high note, that's where we come to the end of today's Football Weekly Extra. Do join us again on Monday when we'll be looking back on all the weekend's action and forward to whatever the midweek holds next week. Not sure what that might be, but I'm sure it'll be very special. And post in the meantime with all your big talking points and comments. We love them. Sean Ingle, thanks so much for being here today. Barry Glendening, as ever, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
And you too, Paul Doyle.
Thanks, James.
Staying awake manfully throughout the entire proceedings. Producer Pete, who patched it all together and is now flashing a light to tell me, really, that's it. And you, the listeners, as well. For now, from all of us here, it is goodbye.
Football Weekly Extra from The Guardian in association with SportingBet.com.